People just need to really look into it and then really figure out how they can leverage AI in order to make themselves the most productive version of themselves, because it's one of those things where people always say, is like, well, even if AI doesn't take your job, someone knows AI might take your job. And that's really key. Important.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from Houston Tillerson University in the heart of downtown Austin, Texas, for another thought provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. And we're here at HBCU AI Conference 2026. We're here to talk to exciting and innovative leaders, and one of those individuals is Mr. Johnny Austin. Johnny Austin is the founder and CEO of Reclusive Funk, where his work blends innovation, technology, and culture, helping communities rethink how emerging technologies can drive creative and economic empowerment. Mr. Johnny Austin, thank you for joining a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I'm happy to be here.
Buddy, we're happy that you're here too now, my man. So let me ask you this though, bro. Tell us a little bit before we get into the heavy stuff. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're from and a little bit about your family.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I was born in Louisiana. So, you know, got some Cajun blood in there. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, my father moved my family up to Michigan. So I actually grew up in Saginaw, Michigan. Not sure if you guys heard of
it. Buddy, I'm from Detroit.
There you go. Okay. So you know all about Sag Nasty.
Yeah, Sag Nasty. Don't say it too loud. We got people in Saginaw that we love. We ain't knocking you guys. It's all good, though.
I mean, you know, I'm dating myself, but in, you know, in those days, it was a term of endearment.
No, I get it, buddy. I get it.
Yeah, so grew up in Michigan, and then when it was time to kind of go off to school, found my way in Tuskegee, Alabama, first studying aerospace engineering, but then decided it wasn't really for me. So I switched it to computer science on a complete whim. And that just kind of started me on this complete journey into the tech industry.
Got it. Awesome, my man.
That's what's up. So let me ask you this, the naming convention, right? Reclusive Funk.
Yeah.
Your company.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit about that and how you got to that point.
Because, bro, I'll be honest with you. I'm thinking Psycho. I'm thinking the Parliament Funkadelic. I'm thinking James Brown. I'm thinking, I was like, Johnny going to bring a guitar with him. He's going to be playing the bass. You know what I'm saying? So, no, buddy, tell us a little bit about Reclusive.
Yeah, so the name is a bit of a double entendre. So for those who study computer science, there's this concept of a recursive function, basically a function that invokes itself. And so the funk, drop the C, which is what it's usually referred to, drop it with a K, and that plays more to my personality. I actually do like music. I played saxophone in high
school. See, I knew it had to be something, though, all right?
Yeah, so the idea was early on, and before this was a company name, this was like an online moniker and whatnot. Okay. It was to combine sort of like my technical interests with my personality and the things that I was really interested in. So when it was time to name my business, what better name than Recursive Funk? So that's kind of where that came from.
Got it. So tell us a little bit about what are you going to be doing here at the conference?
Yeah, so I was invited to the conference to basically come in and lend some expertise. And so the thing that I wanted to really lean into was to see if I could help prepare students for the workforce, because it is different than I've seen in my entire 20-something-odd career. I mean, and there's no real way to prepare for it in a real way. It's just something you have to experience, right? The skill sets required to be successful using AI, how early you have to be, what impact that has on your ability to get hired, just the fact that the hiring market is where it is. There are just so many challenges. And, you know, the question I had was, you know, who's preparing students for this, right? Like in a very practical way. And so I figured, well, it should be you. You know, I have the knowledge, I have this experience, and with Recursive Funk, I'm helping businesses be able to roll out AI. And so I'm seeing firsthand the challenges with the existing workforce, with people who have been working for 5, 10 years. They're struggling in order to be able to show their value and to be able to make a creative impact within their businesses. So it's going to be even more difficult for entry-level students to come in and be able to do that exact same thing in the way traditionally they would have when, like, you and I were kind of going into the workforce. It's just a completely different ball game, and I just figured I'd come here and share some of that knowledge.
Let me ask you this. How have you been able to keep up with that? Because my daughter is in school and learns math completely different than how I learned math. So like you said, we kind of longer in the tooth, and you started a long time ago, but building leverage and not just titles and things of that nature. How did you stay ahead of the strategic curve, and how will you impart that to the young folks now?
Well, I would challenge the assertion that I've actually stayed ahead. I'm barely keeping pace, right? And I'm jogging at that. And that's kind of the problem, right? There's so much, right? When I was waiting to come to talk to you guys just then, I was just, you know, texting with one of my former colleagues. He was like, man, have you seen such and such, right? We're using it, you know, on a job, it's killing us. I was like, man, this is like another thing I gotta look into. One of my clients, which is a startup based out of LA, you know, I'm working with the CEO every single day, and he's like, man, this is gonna change the way we work and operate. You gotta look into this. So like, that's another thing I gotta look into. And so it's a journey of constant learning and just humbling yourself, right? Because whenever I think I have my arms around this thing, right? I'm talking to someone else. There's something new on the horizon. Whether or not it's good or bad, I reserve all judgment, but my job is to make sure that I'm effectively, you know, staying abreast of what's going on so that I can inform my clients, my kids, like everyone I know about what's the best way to navigate these waters.
Yeah, you know, one of the things though is, you know, because a lot of times when things are rolled out, people don't jump into them immediately, right?
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. You know, we had, you know, virtual, you know, we had Skype, we had Zoom, we had all this type technology. And for the most part, nobody used it.
Yeah.
All right. Until the pandemic came. Then they were forced to use it.
Yep.
Okay. Because there was no way to communicate. We had to change the way we did meetings, all that type stuff. Now we use it, you know, 24/7, the whole nine yards.
Yep.
With AI, it seems like we're hearing more of the fear factor of AI versus, you know, hey, this is something you need to learn. This is going to help you. We're hearing more about it's going to replace you. It's going to do this and you do that. So when you have that type of messaging that's being pushed, right, how do you, you know, help empower kids to say, hey, this is something positive. It's going to help you. It's going to help you be able to navigate your career, blah, 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 versus what they're hearing in terms of, oh, this is going to replace you. This is going to do that and do this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think it really has to do with doing your own research, so to speak, right? You have to actually use these tools. Otherwise, it's very easy to kind of fall victim to whatever narrative is out there, right? Don't let other people kind of, you know, dictate what your future is going to be with regard to this technology. To be fair, you know, people haven't done the best job of painting, right, what the positive future looks like, right? The doom and gloom is out there every time you turn around, like, you know, jobs are going to be lost and you're not going to be able to do X, Y, Z. Same conversation I just had. He was talking about his kid and was like, well, he doesn't want to go into computer science, so we're looking at other things. And I hate that kids have to feel like they need to change their interests just to be able to, you know, escape AI, right? So I think the best thing to do is, like every other technological revolution, you have to kind of take your, you know, your destiny into your own hands. Continue to follow your passion, but also understand that AI will be there, but we still don't know exactly how it's going to show up, right? I think it's going to be more of an enabler, right? I say this thing all the time, you know, AI is really a belief in human potential and how productive we can be, and not so much, you know, Terminator 2 is going to take over everything, right?
And that's where people go, though.
That's exactly where people go. But it's because no one's done a good job of painting
the communication is not strong.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very easy to just, you know, have and adopt the doom and gloom,
right?
You know, because, you know, you see stuff like, you know, people getting laid off, but there's, it's also very nefarious because there's also the process of AI washing, where companies overhired during COVID. They had too
flat
many people.
Out, flat out. They're using it as an excuse to lay people off. Right?
But if you dig in just one level deeper, you don't have to get too deep and say, okay, exactly which job did AI take? Like, how did that happen? Right? Not have anything to say about that. It's right. Like, oh no, you know, AI efficiencies, blah, 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 right? And then what happens, right? Stock price goes up.
Correct, buddy. It's, so it's the game.
people just need to really look into it and then really figure out how they can leverage AI in order to make themselves the most productive version of themselves. Because it's one of those things where people always say, it's like, well, even if AI doesn't take your job, someone knows AI might take your job.
And that's
really
key.
Important.
Let me ask you this, because you talked about navigating these waters and you have clients. Mm-hmm. How do you advise leaders from not using this or thinking that this is a silver bullet or a magic wand? Because another aspect of it is, from a leadership perspective, I can just have AI do all of this and go to sleep. I can have my money make money for me and just put it on autopilot and then wake up and be a millionaire. How do you kind of calm them down from some of the overusage, as you said, the overdependence?
Yeah. One of the things that I typically do when I start a new engagement is I kind of I do a bit of a boot camp, right, where I demystify like how AI works. Mm-hmm. And I think that once people see how it actually works, they're like, huh, so it's not magic. Right. It's like, remember that old show in the 90s where like the magician had the mask on? He would show you how all the tricks are done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're just like, oh, that's how it's done. Absolutely. Oh,
sleight of hand.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. That's not that impressive.
Right.
That's what happens when you really dig deep and show people how AI works. So then they like, oh, it's not actually magic. I have to kind of pay attention to this thing. It's just a tool for me to use. And I think that really helps ground people in reality in terms of what AI is capable of. And that really kind of helps to start that conversation.
So, you know, one of the things about your career though, right? You were in fintech for a while, right?
Yeah.
And you started a company and KPIs and measurable results was very key. Speak a little bit into that, about that, in terms of how people can now not just use AI, but in anything they do, be able to set things up where they can measure the results. Because the other thing that's key here, along with AI, is data, right?
Yeah.
And being able to use data effectively, right? To be able to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. Data is foundational, right? AI lives on data. It exists because of data. So it always starts there. And yeah, to, you know, like you were saying, I help build a business to kind of help people pay rent on a schedule that's more in line with their positive cash flow. It was a little bit before AI, but even then, right? When I talk to my clients now, it's still about measurement in terms of, are you actually adding value to the business? Because one of the failure modes I see a lot of businesses run into is that they just want to leverage AI just so they can be able to say they're doing it right. And, you know, hence the stock price and all this other stuff. But one of the things I really challenge people on is, if you leverage AI in this particular instance, how is this going to improve your business, right? How is this going to improve your bottom line? And so really making sure we're using AI in the right places is really important. It's also important to make sure people don't spend a whole lot of unnecessary money. And then how do you measure the effectiveness of AI? A lot of people haven't really figured this out yet, right? They just kind of throw it out there and hope for the best, right? But there's a whole different paradigm of AI evaluations, called evals for short, where you actually are able to evaluate the result of an AI based on what you think good looks like. Right. And so their entire framework is being built as we speak in order to be able to facilitate and drop within these software development teams so that they can use it. Think of it as like testing for AI, but it's a little bit more non-deterministic.
So when you say you think what good looks like, so in other words, if the person says, if I can get to this, this is where I want to be, that's the measurement, that's the goal that you plan towards?
Well, it's a little bit of that. So there's the deterministic, sort of like the number. This is what I want the number to be. But a lot of the AI evaluations, I mean, you've used AI, right? You can ask it the same question 10 times, you're going to get 10 different answers. Mm-hmm. So what we're measuring is, in an ideal world, what would a good answer look like? And you basically build that into your framework. And then you run the AI as many times as you need to, and you can basically measure how good is the AI's response in response to
got
the
it.
Data that you gave it. It's
got
called
it.
The golden
got
data,
it,
right?
It,
so
it
might
it.
Be a little off this time, might be a little off next time, but it's generally in a good enough spot so you don't have to rely on it saying the exact same thing, because it won't.
Got it.
How valid is the fear of AI in the dynamic of it being truly agnostic? Because what we hear is that it's not built by Black folk, therefore it won't necessarily support Black folk or Black folks' positions and mentality. Is it a situation where you're constantly feeding the data to learn you and it can be intuitive enough to get your game? Or is it a situation where you can never break the source code.
Yeah, I mean, out of the box, you just have to assume that the, I mean, it's trained on the internet. We've been on the internet for a long time, right? Yes, you make a wrong turn, you never know what you're going to run into. And granted, to you know, the super scalers and the groups that are producing these AI models, they try to do an okay job, right? Mm-hmm. They should be doing a better job, but they try to do an okay job. I think though, when you're dealing with AI, if you're trying to build a business, particularly if you have a particular demographic in mind who you want that AI to serve, you have some work to do, right? You're gonna have to help to tune the model to establish cultural awareness, cultural sensitivities, things like that to ensure that the AI doesn't overstep its bounds. And just to be cognitively aware of the things that the goes and the no-goes regarding that particular community, right? It will not do that well out of the box. It wasn't trained to do so. It was like the lowest common denominator for literally everyone on the internet. And so you're gonna add, that's where the work is, right? And that's where things like proprietary data for your community comes in. These are things I talk to about my clients as well, but also ensuring that that proprietary data is not violated in a way that your community doesn't distrust you moving forward. So it's a very odd balance to try to strike, and literally everyone's trying to figure this out right now. There's no good way to do this. And so whoever is able to like really crack that code is going to be, you know, hugely profitable, frankly.
You know, this doesn't sound like a silver bullet though, right?
Oh, no.
Sounds like a lot of work. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing though. And again, the messaging is key here.
Yep.
Right. You know, you had kids, you know, put their homework in and then, you know, send their homework to their teacher and the homework was wrong because they thought that AI was just going to come up with the answers for them. And at the end of the day, what you're saying is that you got to train it. Yep. You have to feed it, right? Because it comes in a generic box.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to put in your data. You have to spend time with it. You have to, you know, do the research and set it up where it's critically thinking, okay, to do all the stuff for it to start helping you effectively.
Yep.
Right. Is that what we're hearing here?
Yeah. I mean, there's that. And then there's also, so what I like to do when I'm using AI personally, I don't take its tone out of the box, right? Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting the name of the framework. I think it's called Honest Prompts or something like that. Mm-hmm. But by default, AI like wants you to be right. It wants you to feel good. It agrees with you all the time.
Yeah, you are the best.
You're the most brilliant person in the world.
Tony, you the man.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Exactly. Whenever I'm starting like real work with an AI, the first thing I do, I prompt it to never sugarcoat anything to me. What I value most is honesty and objectivity. Question all of my assumptions.
Correct.
And just kill me. Just like really, really hammer me in terms of, and you know, it can be a little bit weird at first because then, you know, next thing you know, the AI is talking you crazy. But at the same time, it's not reinforcing things that should not be reinforced within your psychology, and which can be very dangerous, particularly for children. And so anyway, being able to do that makes AI a much more effective tool for you as well, because it will do that. It will question all of your assumptions. It'll question your thinking. You know, I've had AI tell me like, you're wasting your time. Like, what are you doing?
Flat
right?
out,
go do XYZ, then come back
and talk to me.
And so that's really important.
And that's a partner, right? Yeah. And that's how you can use it.
So ultimately, when you project this out, is the goal for technologists like yourself to have AI take away your discernment? Because right now you're saying, I'm still working hard. I still got to put in the time and the hours and the reps. But I'm sure there's a person that says, I want this to do everything for me.
Yeah.
And is there a smart enough person or a smart enough opportunity to where it will manage things on its own?
It only handles very narrow levels of management, right? Okay. AI cannot replace your human judgment. Okay. It just can't, right? That's the difference between, you know, I mean, look, these, especially agentic AI, it can be super impressive to watch it do a bunch of stuff that you've been doing for a bunch of years and almost always just get it right. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, one of the reasons why a lot of companies fail when they're trying to deploy AI, I'm sure you've seen all the studies about 95% of AI pilots fail or whatever. It's because people are actually trying to let their judgment be overtaken by AI.
At
the end of the day, the reason why you pay a person for their expertise is because they have judgment. And judgment leads to also accountability. That's another piece we don't talk about when it comes to AI. In order to get here, I took a Waymo, autonomous driver.
You too? I did too. It's my first time. Yeah,
okay. Me too. It's great. The future is here.
Yeah.
I think one of the questions we have around even autonomous driving and AI and things like that is that these computer systems can handle a lot, but at the end of the day, right, if that vehicle were to strike someone or if AI were to make a mistake, right, there we still as a society don't understand how to have accountability kick in, right? If you make a mistake, right, you got to talk to your boss, right? You know, maybe you just get a slap on the wrist. Maybe it's a hit to your performance review or whatever. But I trust you as a human will learn your lesson. And then I know that, you know, next time you're going to try and do better. And if not, then like we have other accountability mechanisms for that. There is no accountability for AI and autonomous systems yet, right? If a vehicle strikes someone, I mean, whose fault is that? Is that the software engineer that shipped the code, right? They were just doing their job. Is it the manager right. that let that person out there? Is it, you know, the CEO, the board of directors? Like whose fault is that?
Right.
And we have not thought through those things yet. And so that's why it's very difficult to see how agentic software could actually replace human judgment, because it's not just the human judgment, it's the human accountability mechanisms that are really important as well.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I didn't even think of that. That's an excellent point. Here's the thing, you know, a Black Executive Perspective podcast, our mission is to make uncomfortable conversations comfortable. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the question I have for you, what do you think, what's an uncomfortable conversation in 2026 that still needs to be talked about today?
One of the reasons why I started my business is because, I mean, look, we've known for a while that there are very few Black executives just in corporate America in general, certainly within tech. But to the point earlier, there's no one in the AI space actually making decisions around how it actually guides this technology, particularly when you're dealing with, you know, traditionally marginalized communities. I mean, there is just no one there. And so once again, I found myself in this situation. It's like, I got to be that guy.
We got to figure it out for ourselves. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, it's 1865 exactly. All over again.
Exactly. And so I am seeing some people come into this space and really try to do really great work, but it's not enough, right? Like I'm doing it from my angle because of my experience as an operator. I can come in and help businesses that way, but we got to get on every level of the stack. So we got to be where the models are being built, right? Where they're being designed, where people are making decisions about which data from the internet actually makes it in. Then there's this process of post-training tuning that happens. That's where we kind of get rid of all the naughty bits of the internet. So it's, consumable for consumers, mm-hmm. right? We got to be at that step of the process. And you have to be in the rollout where I am, the operators and whatnot. We need people in government to be able to actually form some sort of policy
right.
that is equitable right. across the industry, because right now it's kind of a free for all. Everyone just kind of doing whatever they want. And you see this play out, you know, in, you know, public spheres like X, right, where we, you know, well, I won't get into all of that, but I mean,
no, we know where you're going, all good.
And so, and a lot of this has to do with there just aren't the right people
at the table
to say, right. Hey, the hell are we doing?
Right,
we can't
right.
have this model go out and be able to do XYZ. So it goes out, it does all this bad stuff, and then we got to roll it back and, you know, make changes. There's the apology tour and all this other stuff. And so I just think, you know, getting the right people at the table is going to help us be a bit more proactive in addressing these issues.
Let me expand on that, because you said something about accountability earlier.
Yep.
And the one thing that I have a fear for that embodies what you were saying is the lack of contrition that an AI mm-hmm. will have. You talked about both of y'all talked about the Waymo, right?
Yep.
The my bad from a computer just doesn't feel the same as if your taxi driver
yeah.
made a mistake, because then they can explain what they were thinking, when, where, why, and how.
Yeah.
As opposed to a computer saying, oh, I made an error there and lives are at stake and things are at nature. How do you find a harmonious blend to continue the path towards AI and our integration from a societal perspective
yep.
without losing the humanity of a genuine apology or a genuine, authentic, you know what I'm saying? My bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question because, I mean, you see those situations. You read these stories where, like, the AI deleted a bunch of production database. Right. And
what happens?
Like, yeah, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Right.
Yeah, and it does nothing to, you know, calm you down because it's like, I don't care about your apology. It's not real.
Right.
So I think we need to not pretend that that's, you know, a replacement for, you know, reconciling what happened, right? If an agent makes a mistake, it does something catastrophic, right? There is no quote unquote apology from agent that's going to, like, you know, fix this, right? And so I think it really comes down to, we just talked about this in the first place, not letting those really important moments where you need that human judgment go to an escape hatch for AI, right? We need to recognize what those moments are. And then how we actually are able to mitigate that from a human perspective, right? Human in the loop at all times is what's most important to being able to use this technology safely.
So my friend, if you right now, you know, based on Recursive Funk's value prop, what would you say to the people that's watching here that may be interested or could be, you know, potential clients of yours? What would you say to them how you could be able to help them?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you find yourself under some pressure from your board, your customers or whomever to leverage AI and you just don't know where to begin, that's first of all, a very valid way to be, right? This is still brand new technology. We're in it, you know, in it every single day. But you ask, you know, most of the world, they're just like, you know, I don't even know if this is a real thing or not. So if you find yourself in that situation and you just want to consult with someone to help them try to maybe understand, is this appropriate for my product? Or if it's not appropriate for a product, is it appropriate for my employees to make them more effective, right? That's something that I could help with in terms of being able to consult with you, understand what you're trying to build, and then give you a path forward that adds value to your business without doing human damage.
Awesome, my friend. So we want to thank you, my man, for coming on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast, sharing your perspective, and more importantly, coming down to invest your time to be with the kids here at AICon provide your knowledgeable feedback. I think, buddy, they're going to really enjoy you today, as we did on this panel today, my friend. So, you know, Johnny Austin, we want to thank you, my brother, for coming on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast. And if there's anything that we can do for you, my man, you let us know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. So listen, we appreciate you checking out this episode of the Black Executive Perspective Podcast down here at Houston Tillotson University for AICon. We're going to be here all week long meeting people just like Johnny. So definitely check us out. So for my co-host with the most, my boy, typically I say who's down in Dallas, but he's here with me in Houston, Chris P. Reed. For the CEO of Recursive Funk, Johnny Austin, I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We AI'd about it. We're going to funk about it later on tonight at the mixer, right? We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.